You're listening to Doc Talk with your host, that's me, Dr. Adam Nally. Listen and learn as we take complex health topics and make them clear, understandable, and applicable to your life. My desire is that you find the answers to the burning questions that you have, answers that will get you back on track, improve your health, and let you be who you are meant to be. Whatever your reason, thank you for being here. I'm so glad you're joining me today. Let's get started. Well, hello and welcome back to episode 10. Why is my glucose still high? Would be our question. And before we get to our question and answer the information about glucose and what happens to it as you're on a ketogenic or carnivorous diet, I thought I'd answer the question that I asked last time and to tell you who our winner is in regards to the egg question. Yeah, I asked five questions last episode about eggs, and I'll ask the questions again and give you the answers right now and then tell you who the winners are. Question number one was, without breaking it open, how can you tell if an egg is fresh? Well, eggshells are porous, and as eggs age, the moisture escapes and is replaced by outside air, causing it to become more and more buoyant over time. Fresh eggs, when placed in water, contain the least amount of air and will sit right at the very bottom on their side. Older eggs are lighter and they'll tend to roll up and stand at the bottom, and then the rotten egg contains so much air that it floats all the way up to the top. Question number two, which part of the egg is known as the chelates? These are strands that connect the yolk to the ends of the eggshell, resulting in kind of a tug-of-war that helps to keep the yolk centered inside of the egg. Number three, what's the difference between a grade A and the grade AA egg? Well, grade A and grade AA for the Food and Drug Administration, to the highest classification they have, has nothing actually to do with size or fractures or vitamin content of the egg. They actually indicate the quality of the egg white and the yolk. AA eggs are slightly higher in quality and have the plumpest yolks and the thickest whites. Question number four, what's the best way to store an egg in the refrigerator? There's a pocket of air in the larger end of the egg, and it's the most likely source of contamination from foreign bacteria. Storing the egg with the tapered end pointing downward causes the yolk, which is the more perishable part than the white, to settle toward the tapered end as far away from that pocket of air as possible. When the egg is stored with a tapered end up, the yolk can settle right up on top of that pocket, potentially speeding the rate at which the egg will spoil. Question number five, without breaking it open, how can you tell if an egg is cooked? Raw eggs wobble when you spin them. The white and the yolk are still fluid and move around inside the egg when you spin them. Cooked eggs are at least partially solidified and have a much smoother spin to them. So hopefully that answers the question. Now, who are our winners? Actually, Wendy Cortez and Rick Malm sent their emails in at the same time, and so we had two winners instead of one because the timing was perfect and they both got all five answers correctly. So congratulations, Wendy and Rick. We'll be sending you out my DocMuscles.com t-shirt. These are my Bacon is Always the Answer t-shirts, and you guys will love them. All right, today's podcast is about glucose and why your glucose may remain high even if you've been on a ketogenic or carnivorous diet for a few months or even some people up to a few years. Laura Sargent from Austin, Texas sent me a message or a question and asked, "Hi, Doc. Thank you so much for your podcast. My question is this. I think you recently said that it only takes about 24 hours of fasting for most people to get their glucose under 80. Well, mine takes 3 days of fasting, and this even with doing the fasting following strict carnivore with no cheats. Strict carnivore with no cheats brings it to about 92. To get any lower than that has to be no food consumed at all. And as I said, for 3 days, is there anything that can be done to help the situation? Exercise only seems to help at all if it's extremely intense, such as lifting heavy logs, doing it over and over again. Anything less than that, I have very moderate decrease in blood glucose. Yes, I've been tested for diabetes repeatedly and supposedly don't have it." Well, Laura, that's a fantastic question. And it's one of the things that we see with a lot of people. Now, remember that the liver tries to maintain your glucose between 60 to 80 milligrams per deciliter throughout the day. And if it drops below that, then the liver will start kicking out more glucose. And if it goes above that, your pancreas will kick out more insulin. This is done because the liver's primary job is to actually keep the brain happy. Everyone thinks that the liver's primary job is to filter the blood, and that's its second job. Its primary job is actually to produce 100 grams of glucose per day for the brain so that it can make neurohormones. The liver makes about 280 to 290 grams of glucose per day, no matter what you do, except if you have sick fat cells, and we're going to talk about that. There's a number of causes of glucose to be elevated, and we'll touch on that, and then we'll come back to the sick fat cell question. So let's back up for just a minute and talk a little bit about what happens when the glucose drops. So if your not eating any food routinely, you'll start to see the glucose drop. And when the glucose drops below 80 milligrams, then insulin production will start to decrease. When the glucose drops below 70 milligrams, the glucagon and epinephrine hormone will start to be produced. And then when it drops below 67, the norepinephrine and growth hormone levels will kick up. And the, both of those will actually stimulate the liver and help open up actually the fat cells. So it's fat's released, so you can actually produce some ketones as well. And that's where a lot of fat loss starts to occur, is when you're dropping that glucose down closer to less than 80 or 70. When glucose drops below 65, cortisol rises. And when glucose drops below 55, you'll start to get an autonomic nervous system response, which can cause dizziness, lightheadedness, low blood pressure, sweats. And this is the hypoglycemic episodes that happen to a lot of people. When glucose drops below 50, brain function becomes impaired unless you have ketones present. Now, a lot of people who've been doing ketogenic diets for over a year will have blood glucose levels drop into the 45 range while they're sleeping and have no problem whatsoever. But if you don't have any ketones and your body's not used to using ketones, then you'll probably be symptomatic with that and have a hypoglycemic episode. Now, in answer to Laura's question, what is interesting is that a lot of people think that the insulin is what regulates glucose, and actually that's not totally true. Your liver produces the glucose, and insulin counterbalances that glucose by, as insulin rises, glucose is drops as insulin helps the glucose enter into the cells of the body, even the fat cells. But what most people don't recognize is that as the fat cell gets bigger and bigger, it gets sicker. And when we say sicker, what that means is it's overproducing a number of neurohormones. There are at least 160 to 170 hormones produced by fat cells that we know of, and at least 8 of them play a role in glucose regulation. So as your fat cell gets bigger and sicker, it produces a couple hormones that are problematic. Number one is resistin. Resistin actually stimulates gluconeogenesis. And so if you have overstuffed fat cells, you're producing over larger amounts of resistin, and it's stimulating that liver to produce more glucose. This is one of the causes of insulin resistance. It's driven by sick fat cells, not necessarily a broken pancreas. The second issue is that the two other hormones that are produced are tumor necrosis factor alpha and interleukin-6. Now, these players got big names during the COVID-19 issue, and rightly so, because in those patients who are obese or pre-diabetic or diabetic, the spike protein actually stimulates the production of tumor necrosis factor alpha and interleukin-6. Now, the problem is that these two hormones, tumor necrosis factor alpha and interleukin-6, actually inhibit the signal of insulin being received by the liver. So if you're producing insulin and you've got a larger amount of tumor necrosis factor alpha and interleukin-6, it blockades that insulin signal and the pancreas has to produce more. And so this is where insulin resistance really comes from. You've got an increased level of insulin being produced to counterbalance this increased level of tumor necrosis factor alpha and interleukin-6 coming from the fat cells. And then the glucose is staying higher because the resistance is telling the liver to produce more glucose. So you have a rise in glucose and you have a rise in insulin, and there's the perfect storm for insulin resistance. Now, the challenge is that you won't normally see the insulin levels drop below 5 for at least 1 to 2 years. And so it takes 1 to 2 years of ketogenic dieting or carnivorous dieting to actually see that insulin drop to 5 or less after fasting. And you'll see an elevated fasting blood sugar can persist for 1 to 2 years until the fat cells shrink down and they're no longer sick, if that makes sense. A lot of people get really discouraged that they've been doing keto or carnivorous diets for a year and their insulin's still slightly high and their blood sugar is still 109 or 110 when they fast, and they get really upset. I'm not diabetic, but in actuality, you're still insulin resistant. And then insulin resistance will persist until the fat cells shrink. So the goal is to get the fat cells to shrink. So we've changed up the diet, but you've got to shrink those fat cells. Now, the only way to truly shrink those fat cells and activate them is to try to get that blood sugar to drop, as I mentioned earlier. And the way you do that is actually exercise. This is where exercise comes in and plays a huge role. And it's not just walking or jogging, because that doesn't actually drop that blood sugar low enough. As Laura said in her question, the only time she can actually get that blood sugar to drop is with intense exercise. This is why I recommend high-intensity interval training or HIIT-type exercise at least 3 days per week, because this will actually, even if it's only done for 20 minutes, this will drop that blood sugar down, open up those fat cells, let that fat empty out, and actually shrink the fat cells so they become more and more healthy and less sick, so that you're producing less of these hormones like resistin and tumor necrosis factor alpha and interleukin-6. And we actually start to see that those cells heal. This is where that exercise plays a big role. And even if you can't do a large amount of exercise, anything that's going to stimulate that release of fat from those fat cells so they can heal is going to bring that level down. That's why the people who are participating in high intensive interval training will see more success in their carnivorous or ketogenic diets than those are not. Now, some people just can't exercise. Over time, as you're watching your diet, that blood sugar and that insulin level will fall, but it may take time. You can speed that process along through resistance type exercise or interval type exercise. We actually find that it works well with electromagnetic stimulation too. That's one of the reasons I brought in the M-Sculpt into my office, which is one of the components that actually stimulates 20,000 abdominal crunches in 30 minutes. It's actually activating some of the proteins and activating those fat cells so that it releases that fat faster. And we see about a 37% reduction in abdominal adiposity with that because of that activation. Now, another thing that activates it is going to be your stimulants like phentermine, which is one of the things we use in our office as well to help with weight loss. So if you're stuck, there's a couple avenues we can use to try to help speed that process along. Exercise being the most natural approach, and then there's some medical techniques we can add on, either medications or other treatments that we can add on there as well. But don't be discouraged, Laura. That's the big key, is to understand that it's normal to see that elevated, and in your case, it won't drop. Unless you're truly activating that high intensity exercise. And so that's something that needs to be looked at if you can do that type of exercise. Very, very important. Now, what else suppresses those hormones? Well, ketones do. So the presence of ketone actually suppresses the resistance, it suppresses tumor necrosis factor alpha and interleukin 6. If you can get yourself into a ketogenic diet, if your ketones are up, then we can see that. Now, one of the things you may look at is checking your ketones in the blood. If your ketones aren't coming up, then something's inhibiting that. So I would look to say, is there something in your diet still? Are you drinking leaf-based teas? Black tea, green tea, and oolong tea have a tannin that keeps the insulin high and keeps that blood sugar high and keeps you from producing enough ketone to suppress those hormones. So leaf-based teas do it. A number of sweeteners do it. If you're using monk fruit, if you're using xylitol, maltitol, mannitol, any of the sugar alcohols except for erythritol will do it. I've got a whole sweetener article on my website. If you go to duckmuscles.com and you click on the freebies section, you can print off the free sweetener article that's there that'll tell you which sweeteners are okay and which ones aren't. The two newest ones, monk fruit and allulose, they still produce insulin. I see that in my office every single day, and they inhibit weight loss. So be careful with the use of those. That'll delay your weight loss. So be cautious with the use of those if you're making keto foods or keto meals with those sweeteners in them. The other thing is chronic stress. If you're under chronic stress, one of the things that's interesting to see is I have a number of, especially women, but some men, who are chronically anxious will see the blood sugar level jump up and down throughout the entire day as we're wearing continuous glucose monitors. That high stress will release cortisol and will keep the blood sugar high as well. So chronic stress, lack of sleep, the use of leaf-based teas, the use of sweeteners that aren't on the program, those will all play a big role in keeping that glucose high. Hopefully that gives you some clarity. One of the interesting things is that a stress response, if you're driving down the road and somebody cuts you off and your palms start to sweat and your heart races, the release of cortisol in that stress response, or if you're in the woods and all of a sudden a bear pops up in front of you and starts to chase you, that stress response is the equivalent of a donut. It literally is. And so you have to understand that if you're experiencing stress responses throughout the day like that, it's the equivalent of eating a few donuts throughout the day, and it's going to slow that weight loss and make that blood sugar stay high and then insulin stay high. So really important to understand those factors that are there. Hopefully that gives you some insight into that. The last factor that I'm seeing recently that's influencing elevated blood sugars to persist in somebody who's doing a ketogenic or carnivorous diet is that of the COVID-19 spike protein. If you have an active infection, we know that the spike protein itself, when it unwinds the S protein component of that, triggers inflammation via activation of the NF-kappa-B pathway. I'm actually seeing those that got vaccinated or boosted with the COVID vaccine between 6 and 24 months of elevation in that spike protein in about 5 to 10% of those patients who got vaccinated. And with that spike protein being present and staying active can be identified through chronically elevated D-dimers. I check that in my office, and that's how I find, that's how we identify whether the person's got post-COVID syndrome, is that D-dimer stays elevated for anywhere from 6 to 24 months. And that elevation in that spike protein and the unwinding and replication that's occurring within the cells of the body drives the tumor necrosis factor alpha and interleukin 6 interleukins to, or cytokines, they call them, to be elevated. And that drives that elevated glucose by inhibiting insulin further. So in those patients that have that activation that stayed persisting, their blood sugars are staying higher. And I'm seeing that, and I have seen that since they started vaccinating patients or since a person had COVID and had post-COVID syndrome. Though it's very similar because the spike protein is the driver behind both of those. So if Laura, I don't know your vaccination history, but if you happen to be vaccinated, that might be one of the factors that plays a role there that may be, it may be a factor in that regard. Hopefully that elucidates a little bit of clarification in regards to why your blood sugar may be elevated. Hopefully that gives you some insight in that. I find that using a continuous glucose monitor is real helpful to understand what foods and what activities are most beneficial for that. For most people, as we told Laura in the past, that we'll see their insulin levels start to fall and their blood sugar fall within 24 hours. But some patients, it takes 4 to 5 days to see those blood sugars fall. And that's important. And so if you're one of those patients, we want to make sure you're including some form of exercise, especially the high intensity interval training, at least 3 times a week. If you're interested in an high-intensity interval training exercise program that's very simple, you can actually look in the show notes of this show, and I'll have the link to my free bodyweight exercise program. That is a high-intensity interval training type exercise that you can incorporate. It's actually a 6-day program that incorporates just bodyweight. All you have to have is a floor and a pair of shoes, and you can actually do that exercise program in your house. And it works quite well, and it will allow you to actually improve your glucose function. So that may be something to consider. Or if you've got another program that you like, great, use it. Anything that's going to cause you to increase and decrease your intensity over a period of 1 to 3 minutes through that exercise program for at least 10 to 20 minutes is actually fantastic. So check out that link below in the show notes. You guys, thanks for joining me, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. If you have a question that you'd like discussed on Doc Talk, I'd love to answer it. I cannot give individual advice or recommendations, but we can answer the question in an educational format and give you some tools to make educated decisions about your health. If you have a question, email it to questions@docmuscles.com. Again, that's questions@docmuscles.com, docmuscles.com. If you are interested in more personal instruction and information on any of these topics discussed here, go to docmuscles.com/membership to learn more and sign up to be a part of my health and coaching services. It only takes a couple of minutes to learn more about your health. Again, that's docmuscles.com/membership.